The following podcast is an Embassy Row production.
Here we are. Scissoring isn't a thing.
Wow, Liz, I've never seen you so hesitant to introduce the show before. Are you less confident that scissoring is a thing now? Is that the deal?
No, I'm a little nervous because
you want to scissor Renee Stubbs.
I do want to scissor Renee Stubbs, okay. our incredible guest today. My wife was very funny. Renee, before we give you a full introduction, yeah. I showed her your picture and your bio, and she was like, are you dead? I was like, yes, this is you.
I feel like Renee is your exact type.
It's my exact type. I'm actually moving out of the frame because I'm so red
and sweating. She's so red, Renee. She's so red.
If I was single, Renee, let me tell you, I have zero pickup skills, but I would try.
Well, good. Pickup is a good segue. I'm going to read a little bit of your bio because I feel like the scissoring audience needs to know exactly who you are if they don't already. Renee Stubbs is an Australian retired tennis player, coach, and commentator. She worked at the Seven Network between 2011 and 2008 as an analyst for women's matches. She's also an Australian Institute of Sport scholarship holder. She's won four Grand Slam doubles titles and two Grand Slam mixed doubles titles. Casual, me too. I do it all the time. She was ranked world number one in doubles for 3 weeks in 2000, and she represented Australia all four successive Summer Olympic Games, Atlanta in 96, Sydney in 2000, Athens 2004, and Beijing in 2008. Among the many things you do, Renee, we're just so excited to have you. And let me just say, I do another podcast, Martinis and Murder, and my podcast partner, John, is a good friend of yours. And you have come into our Instagram lives, and I've live flirted with you on my Instagram. Is this correct? Did I make you verklempt and flushed, maybe?
Well, you haven't really met me then if you think I get verklempt about any of that, okay? So thank you for having me. Second of all, thanks for the introduction. There's so many things that I, could go back and forth with you all on. But thirdly, I think the most important thing is that I'm glad that we all exist in this world of COVID-19 and we're doing Zooms and podcasts from all over the place. And I am currently in a very beautiful place in Pennsylvania, and I got out of the city of New York for a little time, and it's been really nice. But so nice to see you guys on Zoom.
Yes, very nice to see you. So, Renee, we usually start our podcast off with just asking people how they identify and whether or not you identify as anything or not. We've gotten all different types of responses. I believe Kate Chastain said tall.
Yep. Kate Chastain said she identifies as tall.
Some people say fluid. Some people say gay. How would Renee Stubbs describe herself? How would you identify?
Well, I've actually been in a house with a gay man, and somebody wrote me, and I put on my Insta story, me and my gays, and someone wrote me, and they I don't know if they thought I was being like rude. And they said, aren't you gay? And I said, no, I'm a lesbian. So, that's how I describe myself. So I'd say I was a lesbian. I came to being that very late in my life. I was 25 when I finally discovered that. Although I didn't realize for about 10 years I had crushes on pretty much every friend. I just didn't recognize it.
You're just like me, Renee. You're just like me. We are the same.
And 25, let's just be frank, is actually... it's still young, but it's late in life to realize maybe who you're sexually attracted to. So how did you kind of come to terms with that at 25?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because I wish I'd realized that I was a lesbian a lot younger in my life because, first of all, I went to an all-girls Catholic school. Hello.
Oh, man.
Second of all, I went to the Australian Institute of Sport. I mean, I was like, I just had like an entire buffet right there and I didn't realize it. And then I went to the Australian Institute of Sport, where I was surrounded pretty much by most of the women, probably 70% of them were gay. And I still didn't take advantage of that situation. They're all hot. They're all got gray bodies. And here I am trying to pursue some dude who was a swimmer. I mean, what was my problem?
But the swimmers, anyway, they have those broad shoulders.
Story. Yeah, I dated a swimmer. He had the broad shoulders and I dated a rower. He had a big chest and I still just, it just wasn't happening. And then I started hanging out a lot with my friend Lisa, and then we ended up playing doubles together, and then we got into a relationship, and it was just 7 years of us playing tennis together, winning most of my Grand Slams and a lot of my tournaments with her, and having to maintain a relationship at the same time. It was not an easy thing, but yeah, she's the one that made the first move, and I freaked out for about a week. And then I finally realized this is just how it is.
I mean, that's the most lesbian, that's the gayest thing I've ever heard in my life, Renee. You're definitely not disappointing minute 5 minutes and 35 seconds into this. What was it like to fall in love with your teammate, your friend, your love? Like, how was managing all that? Because I think you really, to say that you U-hauled is a vast understatement here.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was probably the reason we stayed together so long is that we didn't U-haul into each other's homes. We just sort of conveniently stayed in each other's. She lived in Philadelphia. I live in Florida. So we were just like, depending on where the tournaments were, we stayed in each other's homes. And then we were winning a lot together. So it was like, hey, this is convenient. We're sharing hotel rooms, which it took us about a year to finally share a hotel room. We used to stay. There was one time we at the French Open where we were staying literally in the same hotel, and we were down the hallway from one another. And we would like open our door and like peek out down the hallway. And then we would run to each other's room to spend the night. So it was, we wasted a lot of money getting separate rooms. It was just so stupid. And then at the US Open one time, we got two rooms right at the end of the hallway that had this random door that you could close. So we could open our room doors and just sneak back and forth to one another. So that was a nightmare, having to hide that. And then finally, after like 6 months, we're like, why are we hiding this? The entire tennis world knows we're together. Like, who cares? But it was difficult because we would fight a little bit on the court. We never fought off the court. But we fought often on the court, which made for some really interesting stories. Like, we would tell each other to F off at times, and we would talk to each other for five games, pretty much what most people do for about 2 days. But we did it for like five or six games. And so it was a little highly charged. But in the end, I mean, to win like Grand Slams together as a couple, like, that was kind of amazing. Yeah.
I mean, that's an awesome experience to have, especially for your own like formidable coming out years. I'm curious though, like, okay, did the team, when Lisa hooked up with you, did you know she was gay, or was it like you both were discovering each other's maybe fluidity at that point together? Like, did you know that she was an out lesbian?
Yeah. Oh, me? I'm getting, wow, Renee. I gotta tell you.
She matches my flirtation energy.
I mean, I'm blushing. We have not had somebody. Everybody just hits on Darren, and Darren hits on them the whole time. I'm gonna hope and pray that your energy is coming my way, and I'm dead right here.
I think it's interesting that you can start.
Listen.
Go ahead.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's a point that we'll get into threesomes into the story, but, you know, there's three of us here. I'm just saying, but, you know, I think we're kind of far from each other, so it's not possible.
You're putting my flirtation game to shame, Renee. Have you ever seen Liz so weak? She's like slumped in her chair. I've never seen anything like this. You might have to call your wife after this.
I needed this.
You might have to. My God.
I'm trying to think of what was the question?
Like, I don't know.
We're distracted by each other's beauty.
I think I blacked out.
The question was, I mean, it's really interesting to start a relationship with someone that you've never really experienced women before. Keep it for 7 years.
Not really.
Oh,
funny.
I remember now, Darren. Yeah, I remember.
Go for it.
Well, let me say, it was her first time as well. So we were each other's first. The music. And, but what I didn't know, two or three years into our relationship, I found out she'd hooked up with some chick in a nightclub. And I was like, excuse me? I was like, I thought I was the first. And she's like, well, no, there was this one time where I kissed this girl. I was like, hold on to everything right now. So no wonder you were the one that like made the first move, because you'd already done it. I was like,
But do you consider kissing? I mean, was it more than kissing in the nightclub?
I mean, I don't know. You tell me. I think that's hooking up with somebody of the same sex in some respect. I mean, I never asked them how far it went. I mean, I was just like, okay, so you kissed. And I knew the person. I knew the person. That's what
The kicker. That's the difference.
It's interesting, though, what you mentioned about the hotel rooms. Because for me, I came out when I was 19 in a small private liberal arts college. And I felt like I was really the only out person there, or at least was like coming out when I was a sophomore. And I don't remember really having a hard time with it. I think the hardest part for me was coming out to myself and just sort of recognizing that, okay, my life might be a little bit different. But I do remember sneaking into her house and not wanting anyone to see me. And a lot of times Liz and I talk about sort of internalized homophobia, just like the shame that can come with being gay. And for the hotel situation for you guys, were you sneaking around because there was a little bit of that, or you didn't know if it was a serious relationship and you didn't want to come out to the team yet? I mean, what was sort of the reason to sneak around for you? What was that mentality like?
I mean, being embarrassed, I guess, just like not wanting anyone to know that this was going on. And I remember that when she kissed me, I literally jumped out of the car and I'm like, that can never happen again. That can never happen again. And we were so close. We spent every minute together. And then like a week later, we slept together. And I was like, that can never happen again. That can never happen again. But clearly it kept happening and it kept happening. And then I realized, I was like, oh, I get it. You know, and then I started thinking about some of the relationships and friendships I had with people. And I was like, oh my God, no wonder I used to send her a tape. I mean, remember back in the day, you guys aren't old enough, but maybe like the radio, you would like hear that song. He's like, I got to get that on tape for her.
Renee,
I'm old enough. Don't be fooled by the Botox.
We're not, Liz.
Wait, hold on a second. You've had Botox? Where did you get the Botox in COVID?
No.
This is pre-COVID Botox.
Pre-COVID. But I will say, actually, Renee, I did get an email from my, I guess I go to a plastic surgeon to do it. I've never had plastic surgery, but I go to one for the Botox and they said they're open.
I just got one too. Actually, believe it or not.
Well, there you go.
People need Botox even in COVID. Let me tell you, they really do.
But it's not until like mid to late June. So anyway, well, I actually have a question for you in regards to, you know, being in a relationship with your partner. I have, I guess, heard in documentaries or interviews with other athletes that they tend to abstain from sex before big matches or what is, no? Okay, you're looking at me like, absolutely not. I don't know. Some people are like, I have to conserve the energy. I'm like, okay, I don't know. Sports are not like, you know, just a question. So no, were you scissor kicking it before?
I think it's an individual thing. I will say that. I think for women, well, I can't speak for men because I don't know what it feels like, but clearly. But no, that was never off the table for me. Girl, come on.
Yeah, come on. Come on now. Athletes need it 100%. Non-athletes need it.
This is all I say to people. And they're like, well, I'm an athlete. That's all I need to say to them. That's it. And they go, oh, okay, got it.
Me too. I've got it. I heard you loud and clear.
Liz is not going to survive this podcast. I can already tell. I want to go back to what you're saying, like the shame sort of around it. Because it's rare, at least in my opinion, for someone to sort of come out with a person and then have like what seems like a really successful 7-year relationship, especially with like someone you also work with. How did you get over the shame? And was it just happening long enough where you were like, what the fuck are we doing? And you just felt confident to come out? Like, what was really that point? Because I think a lot of our listeners, it's not necessarily that they're scared of coming out. It's like once they do that, what's that next step? Like, where do people find their own confidence? And for me, it was just a matter of time. I don't know what it was like for you, but I'm just curious, like, yeah, what was that kind of process like?
Yeah, I think at some point I was just like, this is it. I mean, this is the life that I'm happiest doing. And I was, you know, I had the luxury of not sort of being home. I was always traveling. I was playing. Right. I was in an environment that was semi acceptable of women who were sports athletes that were gay, and it wasn't a big secret. Not that there's like tons of them walking around on the tennis tour. Everyone's like, must think that, oh, it's just everywhere. It's not, you know, but there were a small little group of, you knew, like lesbians on tour that you could kind of hang out with and be more social with and go to dinner with and not feel ashamed to like kiss your girlfriend or put your hand around her or, you know, your arms around her, hold hands or something like that. But I don't know. And I think everyone knew, I mean, the first person I told and the only person I really told, to be honest, because everyone's like, you know, how are your family? And I was like, I never really told them. I told my sister and there's five kids. And once I knew told my sister, I knew the entire family would know because I was traveling so much. And I was also living in the US at that point. So I wasn't really around my family all that much. But as far as I told my best friend and I said, oh, I've got to tell you something. I'm seeing someone. And she looked at me and she's like, is it Shorty? And that was, my girlfriend was a lot shorter than me. And she's like, is it Shorty? And I'm like, yes. And I started crying. She's like, oh God, we already knew. I mean, it was like, there's some people where it's just beyond obvious. And for me, it was beyond obvious. I was just talking to this with my guy friends here this week. And I was like, I showed them a photo of me when I was like five and I was in like chaps and like a cowboy outfit. And I'm like, hello. I mean, you should have known at five. So I don't think it was a big surprise for anybody.
Were you relieved that your sister and family already kind of knew? Or were you like embarrassed by that? Like, was it a relief to know that you didn't need to come out to the world again and your sister was going to do it for you? Or
yeah, I mean, it's not something that I was like overly going to call my parents or talk to my parents about. Just, I don't know. Some people have really like very great relationships with their parents where they tell them everything and it must be, I think, more difficult for them. For me, it was just like me not even saying anything was like not a big deal in my family. Oh, shocker. No, she didn't tell us. So it was more important for me to tell my best friend and my sister was like very probing with it. And at the time, Lisa and I were staying with her and her husband and I was upstairs and Lisa was sleeping on the couch downstairs. Kind of funny. And like later on, they're like, I can't believe you let her sleep on the couch. I was like, I didn't want to say anything, you know? And then I did an article probably like 4 or 5 years later it was a reporter in Australia that I was just talking to about life. And she said, would you ever come out? And I was like, oh, I mean, I don't need to. And she's like, I'd love to write the story if you want to do it. So I said, okay. And I trusted her not to sensationalize it. And so, yeah, so she wrote an article about it. And once it came out, I was a little bit like, oh God, how are people going to receive this? But everyone was amazing. So, and from that moment on, and the reason I did the article is because I knew that tennis would end one day and I knew I was hoping to have some kind of work after that in TV or radio or whatever it was. And I never wanted anyone to, you know, ask me, where's your boyfriend? Are you married? I was just like, I'm gay. And they knew that they were employing me based on knowing that I was gay. And I was so free and not have to hide anything. And I know several people that were in media. I mean, Robin Roberts is a perfect example for so long that couldn't come out. And now she's out. Oh, she's like, you know, it must have been so freeing for her to finally do that and not get fired. Yeah, that's why I did it.
Well, I was going to ask, you know, what has it been like for you now that you've transitioned in more of a entertainment and media role, I'd say? Being gay, you know, have you met Robin Roberts? Like, was there a secret handshake? Like, people always ask us about like the lesbian mafia, which is totally real. It is a real.
I'm not part of it, but I would love to be part of the lesbian mafia.
You're in it.
I'm adjacent.
Anyway, but do you feel that kind of, you know, camaraderie in media because you've been out for so long?
Yeah. Has it helped you or has it hurt you?
Well, I don't know if it's hurt me. That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, maybe it has, maybe it hasn't. Nobody said you didn't get the job because you're a lesbian, you know, but I also work in tennis and everybody knows, so it's not a big deal. I think we have our little fun group. Obviously we all go out, but no, I don't feel like there's a lesbian mafia out there that we all stick together. For me, it's really important to support women, whether they're gay or straight. Like I'm always about promoting and helping women get ahead, especially in media. And like getting the producer jobs and getting the executive producer jobs and being the CEO of the company. Like for me, it's like, how can I help more women? That would be what I want. I want women mafia, not like a lesbian mafia. But at the same time, you know, I don't think it's hurt me and everybody knows. I mean, a funny story at an ESPN production meeting one time, we always come and I often dress in a dress when I'm working for ESPN and on the TV. And some days I wear dresses, some days I don't. Of course, all my tennis friends are always like, "Whoa, nice dress." And I'm like, it happens sometimes, right? It's a game. But I came to a production meeting and I had like ripped jeans on and I looked like pretty much like I do today. And my executive producer looked at me and he's like, and I go, you know, Jamie, I am a lesbian when I'm not on TV. The whole room, you know, the whole room like died. And I was like, they know who I am. I don't have to hide it. And I'm so thankful for that because I'm such an authentic person. So that's great for me.
How about the fans? like myself, I mean, have you gotten any like insane lesbian fan mail, or what are your DMs looking like?
Ooh,
I know
yeah.
you and
what
I were DMing.
Yeah.
Well, not a lot of people know that I...
Other than you and...
Say that again. Other than me and Darren. Well, I am kind of the ghost behind the scissoring isn't a thing socials, only because while Darren and I both have a million jobs in between the two of us, I just kind of... I like... the interaction with the strangers.
She loves social media way more than I do, weird, but she does.
I do. I love it. What are the DMs like for you, or have you gotten any like proposals other than mine? Unfortunately, mine's long gone because we didn't meet soon enough.
Yeah, that's right. You're 2 years too late.
Yeah.
I get some randoms. I got one person who proposed to me, sight unseen, clearly.
Really?
And yeah, I mean, I do get the, oh yeah, she was like, you know, and I'm like, well, I have a girlfriend, so you're going to have to put that off for a little while. But yeah, I had this one super fan that literally would turn up anywhere I was, and it would kind of freak me out a little bit. And to the point that she gave me a card once at Wimbledon, and she said, I just want you to know I'm not crazy. And I was just like, kind of acting like it right now.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's usually when people tell you they're not crazy, they're crazy. You know, Renee, you have such a good sensibility about you, and you just seem so like free and open, at least the Renee that I'm meeting today. But earlier in the conversation, when we asked how you identify, you were saying that you're not gay, you're a lesbian. But is there a distinction without a difference? I mean, obviously a lesbian is... no gay man is calling himself a lesbian, right? But I feel like gay is sort of this universal term, at least now, for at least queer in some sort of way. Like, are you offended by anything? Has anyone ever offended you about maybe your sexuality or how you present? And if so, why have you been offended by that? And how do you handle stuff like that?
No, I don't get offended by much at all, because I kind of know that most of the stuff that people say is all from just fear and ignorance. And I mean, if somebody wants to call me some, you know, dykey lesbian or something, I'm just like, that's me, you know, so it doesn't bother me whatsoever, because that's just coming from such an ignorant standpoint. I mean, again, like I've been staying at a friend's house here and three gay guys, and we just laugh. They call themselves ladies all the time. And you come down in the morning, they're like, morning, ladies. I mean, it's just like, I'm the man of the house, even though, and they do all the cooking. All the cleaning. I'm just pretty much at an Airbnb where they're taking care of me. I mean, I think the great thing about once you realize who you are and who you come and how comfortable you are in your own life, then you can live a free and happy life. And that's for me is like the most like satisfying thing with my life, is that I never have to hide. I'm a super authentic person, very passionate about anything that I do. And I want to be happy. And when I'm happy, then, you know, I'm so content in my life. And my straight friends and gay friends, like, we don't judge each other at all.
I mean, very well said. And I'm curious, because when Lisa kissed you, right, when you were like 25, you were 25 when she kissed you, did you ever, since that moment on, go back to men?
Well. So I was very heartbroken, and I was in Paris, and I got very drunk after losing at the French Open. And I went out with my straight, very fun Austrian tennis playing friends. And we went out, and it was just a douche, like Paris underground nightclub. And there was this really hot black guy. And that happened before I realized I was a lesbian. I did sleep with the black guy. And then I kissed a guy on a dance floor in Paris. And I made out with him, and it was about half an hour. And then finally, like, gotta go. And my friend's like looking at me like, hell is going on over there? I was like, I don't know. I'm lonely. And then that was it. That's the only time since.
Wow. And do you have a girlfriend now currently, or are you single?
I do.
And
yeah.
How long have you two been together?
Year and a half. Got together in October of 2018. And so, yeah, she's in Australia and I am in the United States, and we have been away from each other for over 3 months now. So yay. So that's been a little difficult. Yeah.
I was going to say, a long distance relationship between like Philly and Florida with Lisa seemed far, but the United States and Australia, that's like, how do you keep that going? Especially
the
during
time difference
and also during quarantine, like what are you doing to keep that relationship alive? Do you find it to be difficult or easy because you guys might be best friends or whatever?
Well, it sustains our relationship a lot longer because we like it's impossible to fight. The time difference is brutal. There's this little thing called FaceTime. I don't know if you know what that is.
Yes.
But we use that a lot.
I bet.
And, you know, that's all I'm going to get into.
Okay. What do you think about kind of the young queer? We talk about this a lot, actually, on the show, and have had people of all walks of life, ages, backgrounds, etc., on the show. What do you think about young queer culture today? Like all of the kids kind of being non-binary and not this and everything of that.
And queer being this huge umbrella
term,
which really back in, even I'm 32, and so I'm young 30s. And even when I was coming out at 19, it was pretty much bisexual, gay, or lesbian. It was really just LGBT. But now there's so many other letters. Do you find that that's a good thing or taking away maybe from our community? How do you justify all that?
Well, I don't know if you've ever seen Judy Gold stand up, but Judy's a friend of mine, and I went and saw her in New York. It was actually at our LPAC event in New York that I'm on the board of, and we do this thing called Levity and Justice, and we have it every year in New York, and Judy speaks, and Judy did this whole skit about the LGBTQI, and then she just went on about six more letters after that, and she's like, I don't get it. Can you guys just have your own thing? Like, why do you... I mean, I just think, look, I think just like it was back 70, 80 years ago, I mean, there wasn't LGBTQ, right? It was just, you're gay, that's it. And now everyone wants to be identified and everybody has that right to be identified in the way that they feel comfortable. And I think that that's fine. Like, I'm always like, you're bisexual? Like, boy, your pool is really big. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really understand that. But then I'm like, I don't really understand trans, but then they don't. I mean, so to me, it's just like, guess what? Everybody has their journey. Everybody has their life. This is how they feel. This is where they're comfortable. And I'm like, have at it. You know what I mean? I think us, like being gay, I think that we should be very accepting of every minority. It doesn't, you know, Black, Hispanic, gay. I mean, this is where I think the country like could come together, is that all the minorities, including us, all come together and band together and say, this is what America is. You know what I mean? This is where we all should be living, not in this really straight line of people. So, I mean, for me, it's like, listen, pick your letter. If that's how you feel, go for it.
Yeah. It's interesting because what really resonated with me is like everyone can kind of pick their own lane or identify. They should be identified the way that feels comfortable to them. And that's something that we talk about a lot. And I think education and hearing more people's stories and backgrounds and their point of view only educates us more. And everybody, great, like literally when we ask people, and that's why we start the podcast with asking people how they'd like us to identify them or how they identify, because no one has really had the same answer. I have to tell you, Renee, I usually identify as bisexual, but after this podcast, probably never going to say bisexual again. It's gay all the way for you. let me tell. I'm like, ooh,
never
sweating.
Seen you like this, Liz.
I know, I'm
wow.
really dying. So you talked about getting sweaty in a nightclub in Paris.
Oh,
oons.
Wow, this is the imagery. Or yeah, starting your question off.
Have
with
you ever
Liz?
Been? Have you ever, Darren, been in a sweaty ass, like deep fucking weird Paris nightclub?
I have been.
So we can all, which that is a privilege that we've all had. Holy shit, do I miss like weird things like that? We are in quarantine. I know you're having the gayest weekend of your lifetime, Renee. I saw horses. I mean, I saw you guys. There's like an equestrian element
like
to wherever you are.
There's a grand piano behind
her. Yeah,
there's
a grand piano.
We don't know what's happening.
You have Carson Kressley with you. Like, you're basically living my gay dream.
What the fuck is going on? Yeah, okay, yeah.
What are some things that you miss? Of course, your girlfriend. Also, I'd rather not talk about your girlfriend anymore. Just kidding. But what do you miss in the quarantine the most?
Outside of your girlfriend, which we're not going to name her on this podcast.
It's fine. So happy for her.
Her name is Eden.
Of course. Ooh, it is.
That's a
of
cool fucking name.
Of
she's got to have a cool fucking
like a
name.
Cool
God
fucking
damn.
Name. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, Liz
and
is
And she's
not...
really hot. I've seen her on the internet.
Wow,
God,
Liz.
Damn it. Anyway, continue.
Chill your stalking.
What have I missed? Back to that question. Is that what you asked me?
Yes.
My mind goes so many different places. I'm like, oh God, quarantine for 3 months is killing me. I miss people. I'm such a people person, and I miss hugs. I'm such a physical like person with my friends. And I think it'll simplify our lives a little bit. Coming out of this, we'll realize what's really important in life is like friends and relationships, and not sort of like getting ahead in life, even though that's fantastic and making money and doing all sorts of things. It's like really what sustains you is like human relationships with people. So for me, that's like where I will hopefully, I've always been that person anyway. So for me, it's like, I'm dying to get back to that. I'm obviously want to be back, you know, on the tennis court and coaching and commentating and doing what I love and traveling a little bit, not too much. I mean, it's been nice for me to stay home. It's the most that I've been home ever in my whole life. So that's been great. It also makes you realize who's your friend, the ones that check in, the ones that check on you, the ones that you are always checking on. I don't know. I've enjoyed that part of this whole disaster, but at the same time, I think it really will make everyone realize like what's super important in life is human contact and human people. That's my love language. My love language is physical touch. I don't know if you've done the five. Have you done the love languages?
I have. Yeah. Touch is mine for sure. And like words of affirmation.
Mine's gifts.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Renee's going to send you a gift tomorrow in the mail.
Please tell me it's not.
No, it's not.
Tell me it's not gifts. Gifts is one for you?
No, it's not. It wasn't one. It wasn't.
It was a strong one.
No, it wasn't. It was the first one was physical touch, but I did have gifts in there. I do remember.
Are you a Leo?
I'm actually a Cancer with a Leo moon. So that does not technically mean you kind of are a Leo in the end.
What are you, Renee? Just so we know.
I'm an Aries. And I've had three types of girlfriends in my whole life. Three? I've had more than three girlfriends, but... Leos, they always break up with me. They're the worst. Geminis and Cancer. That's it.
Well, I'm a Gemini, Renee.
Well, guess what I am? I'm a Cancer with an Aries rising and a Leo moon.
What
so.
Do we think of Geminis? I mean, are they just superior human beings? Is that what you're trying to say? We're just better looking? We're smarter?
Oh,
like,
God, Darren,
what are you trying
no.
to say about Geminis right now? Because I don't understand anything astrological at all.
My current girlfriend is a Gemini. So, and I had an ex-girlfriend that was a Gemini. And when we would fight, I would say to her, put the evil twin back in the box. Okay. And then we'll have a conversation.
Fair enough. I've been told that maybe once before. Just pivoting, because I've actually wanted to ask this question for like 20 minutes because I'm really curious. So you grew up in Australia, you're Australian, and have you ever seen Nanette by Hannah Gadsby, that special on Netflix? So she's Australian, she grew up, I think, in Tasmania, and talks about a lot of, she was beaten up. I mean, she's masculine looking, so I think that might be a little bit harder for gay women who maybe portray themselves as quote-unquote the dykier option, which she sort of talks about. And she was really hate-crimed in Tasmania along with Australia. Do you find that living in the United States has been easier to be a gay person, or is Australia really caught up to the gay faction and it feels freer? What was it like sort of growing up in Australia with that, knowing you might be different?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I met Hannah actually at the US Open last year. She came and watched some tennis. And I just want you to tell you, she's like the sweetest, nicest person in the world. I went and saw her stage performance of her new Netflix that's just out called Douglas. It is crying funny. Okay. And I saw it twice and I cried both times. It's
oh,
so
that's awesome.
Funny.
Good.
She's so funny. And she tells her, I'm not even going to tell you any part of it because you have
don't to spoil it because it's actually on
Nanette
our list.
Nanette was amazing.
Yeah. It just came out. No, Nanette, she starts out by saying, if you came here because of Nanette, why? Because it's so Nanette was really serious. And
yeah.
I love Nanette though. I cried. I love Nanette.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved it
too. Because, but it's so different. Like Douglas,
but it's dark.
It's comedy. It's so funny. But she opens a door. Well, Nanette's dark, but Douglas is like, she opens a door to who she is, and you're going to be like, what? Like she really becomes very honest in this, and it's so funny. So I recommend everybody watch it on Netflix. But growing up in Australia, I mean, I was lucky enough in some respects that I wasn't out when I was living in Australia, and I was in Australia. I was just that tomboy that played tennis and was the attention-seeking loud one over in the corner. I mean, so for me, it was just like, hey, she's a sporty, blah, blah, blah. You know, so I didn't really get exposed to it when I was there. I had such a great childhood as far as being outside and playing sports. And Australia is such a sporty country. So if you're playing sports, they're not like, is she a lesbian? Should we be worried? Should we put her in a dress? They were just like, go, have fun. You know what I mean? Right. And then when I came out and I was living a life as a lesbian, I was living in the US. And then when I would go back to Australia, I was like, yeah, we already knew. We saw you at 5. Like, Australia is a very misogynist country, that I will tell you. And I think it's worse in Australia than it is in the US. There's no doubt about it. And there's still, how to this so? Day, I'm just like, oh my God, guys,
yeah, how so?
Do not get it. They're just the things that they say. They don't realize, like, it's like the US back in the 80s. You're just like, you can't say that anymore. You know what I mean? So, you know, women don't get the high paying job. They get passed over. I deal with it in television a lot. I had a really great, you know, producer one time that I thought was the best producer that I'd worked with. And then when we went to the big show, she was like out doing field producing and not doing the production that I thought she deserved because she was a woman. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You know, I see that on a systemic way in Australia, and it happens in the US, but not as bad as Australia. So I didn't get, there was no bullying as far as my lifestyle was concerned. So I'm lucky that way. Plus, if anyone knows me, they probably wouldn't want to bully me. That's all I'm going to say.
I know you could take somebody down,
I
Renee.
Either.
I know you could.
Yeah, no. Interesting, though. I mean, because a lot of our guests, you know, we had Reza Farahan on from the Shahs of Sunset. And one of the things I found really interesting about that conversation was obviously being Persian, but Iranian, you know, Iranian and being out and how people are, you know, we had a friend that was killed, went back home to Afghanistan and was killed because he was gay and he came out to his parents. And I think a lot of people, you know, I think things get better. I'm a positive person. I think that there's no better time in the world to probably be a woman and gay than it is today. But I don't really know about other cultures. I mean, I grew up in a really progressive town with really progressive parents in a suburb of Manhattan. It's like, it's hard to, even though I had my own struggles and I have been hate crying myself, it's kind of hard to see out of your little bubble. And so for me, I just kind of want to know about like different cultures. And Australia seems to kind of mirror the United States culturally in a lot of ways. I live there for 9 months. You know, language is the same. People kind of have the same sensibility. But Hannah Gadsby kind of made me feel differently about it. And I was just wondering if that was the case. And I think for certainly to be a little bit more of a paternalistic society is going to be harder to come out as gay. So it's kind of nice that you had that cushion to come out in the United States and then go back and be like, yeah, everyone fucking knew I was gay. It's fine. Like it's a lot chiller. And you grew up in a really progressive place as well, but
I had conservative parents. Also, right. My father's from New Zealand and he kind of like forced me out of the club. I know. I hope you still love me, Renee.
He's a Kiwi.
He's 6? Yes. He's like heaps and heaps of 6. yeah. Renee, you might kind of understand my perspective on this. I mean, he's such a Kiwi and borderline waspy in that sense. Like that's how I grew up, especially having a mother from outside of Philadelphia and then this like father, you know, from Wellington, New Zealand, who doesn't talk about anything. We never talked about emotion. We never talked about shit. Like, to this day, he's like, what do you do for work? I'm like, don't worry.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, when I was listening to you, I was like, oh, kind of the same. But I'll never forget it. We had gone sailing. My dad's a huge sailor. We had gone sailing and he looked at me. We were, you know, whatever, having Sauvignon Blanc, of course, from Marlborough, Sauvignon Blanc. And he's like, you're not ugly. He's like, why don't you have a boyfriend anymore? You used to have a lot of boyfriends. Like, you're a pretty attractive woman. Like, what's wrong with you? And before I could say anything, he's like, and he like leaned back. He's like, your mother is going to be really pissed. I was like, you know,
I mean,
like,
it is what it is.
But I had kind of a similar experience to that. And I was same to you. Like, I don't know if I ever like announced that I was out. I just kind of continued to date women and just never really talked about it because it's like, who fucking cares? You know what I mean? At this point, I was just like, what? And I was older. I was 27. So I was just like, who gives a shit? You know what I mean?
I know we're wrapping up here, but I have to ask you this. I know you have a girlfriend, but would you ever date? And I'm asking maybe
I'm
for
like,
Liz
you
or not.
You guys can't see my face, but I'm like, what?
Would you, ever
ask?
Date
me.
Someone who wasn't out or someone who wasn't 100% a lesbian? Like, would you date someone who's bi or maybe considers themselves queer or fluid or polyamorous or maybe isn't out? Would you ever do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because they're going to leave. If they're going to leave you, they're going to leave you for somebody. Who cares
exactly.
if their pool is a little bigger? I mean, if you're confident in your own relationship and if you're in yourself and you're, like I said, you're a relationship, then who cares if they want to go sleep with a guy or a girl or whatever? I mean, it's just like, you're here with me. If we're happy and satisfied, then yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've never dated anyone that is bisexual. I just had to think then. I was like, who can someone? No, I've never dated anyone that's like has identified as bisexual that I know of. So I guess I've never really been put into that situation. But yeah, I'd be totally fine with it. I mean, if they're into me, that clearly they're a lesbian at the time.
Well, that's always been my attitude,
yeah,
right? Like, bisexuality never threatened me because it was like, if you're going to, why would being gay or bisexual, like, just because you have a bigger pool of people doesn't mean you find every guy attractive, doesn't mean you find every woman attractive. I mean, attraction is attraction and it's person to person, really, no matter what we think. But we always usually ask our guests this, and certainly with a girlfriend, this is an appropriate question, but do you have any celebrities that you could get a hall pass for that you, that you've talked about with your girlfriend?
The list is long.
Give me your top three. If you Christmas wish list, who are you choosing?
Kate Blanchett all day.
That's a great pull. That's a
solid.
Wow. Okay.
That's a very lesbian answer,
yeah,
too.
That is, you're fully lesbian now by saying Kate Blanchett. Okay.
Yeah. I'm fairly sure I am. Yeah. Charlize Theron.
That's my top five for me.
You know,
okay.
Actually, do you know that I saw one of the last times I was out before the quarantine hit, I saw Charlize Theron and her mom at the farmer's market in Hollywood and literally almost. I've seen her a couple times out in the wild of Los Angeles, but she had these big.
And you slid down the aisleway.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I was
right.
like, and
that's
here
right.
I am. No, she was actually buying lettuces where I buy lettuces. She had huge Dior black sunglasses, no makeup, so chic. Anyway, continues. I just wanted to set the scene. See, I missed the farmer's market in the quarantine.
Apparently.
Anyway, okay, give us your
one more.
God, I'm trying to think. Oh my God.
You like blondes, huh?
I was like, no, like maybe they'll listen and send me an email or tweet me.
This is your chance. This
By
is
the
your
way,
chance.
Renee, if Kate Blanchett and Charlize Theron listen to this podcast,
yeah.
I'm telling you
I'm
right
dead.
Now, I hope we get an email.
That'd
okay,
be great.
Give us your last one.
It's a toss-up because it's kind of the dirtier version, but Dua Lipa is like on my new list.
Wow. Renee,
okay.
I was not expecting that.
That was like a fucking curveball.
I was not expecting you to say Dua Lipa because I thought you were going to name another blonde because you seem to have a thing for blondes, but okay. Wow.
No,
interesting.
All my friends say that. I mean, I was going to say Halsey because she's that, like, just.
She's hot.
She's super
hot.
Yeah,
she's sexy. She's androgynous sexy.
But I was just thinking of late Dua Lipa as like when she performed, I don't know where it was, the Grammys and stuff, and walked out. And I was just like, oh, okay. That is, yeah, she seems like a
all
sweetie.
Right. Well, Renee, we hope all those three people come true for you because Kate Blanchett ain't kicking her out of bed. I ain't kicking Dua Lipa and certainly not Charlize Theron out of bed. So those are three amazing choices.
Yeah,
so
those
job.
Were some of the best choices we've gotten. So congrats.
When I leave here, I'm going to be like, oh, I should have said this, 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 you know.
Renee, please DM me all of those. Don't worry.
Kate is number one. Kate is number one forever. Kate is number one forever.
Well, you mentioned that something that you miss is people and interactions. Darren and I are very much the same.
Yes.
I'm so grateful that you took the time to come
we love
on
you.
Zoom with us, and we love you. And I'm just going to ask now, when we're out of this quarantine, will you please come back on the show in person when we record?
Can you have a drink with Liz? Because she's not going to talk. She's not going to shut the fuck up about you for months. And I can't have that on my conscience. So
no,
you're just going to have a friendly, I'm using air quotes here, friendly drink with Liz.
Oh my God.
Okay.
No, but will you come back on the show in person and hang out with us? Because I think it would be so much
absolutely.
Fun to have your energy in real life, because it is really different when we're in the same room together. And
we love you. We're huge fans of you. And I want to do it again. We appreciate you coming on the show, Renee.
Listen, I understand. As I said, I have my own podcast, and the difference of being in the studio and being able to rap with one another back and forth, as opposed to waiting for that's what it feels like when you're doing it on Zoom. So I get it.
Before we let you go, where can people find you, and where can people find your podcast?
Well, who knows during COVID, but you can definitely find me, and my podcast is called The Racket Magazine Podcast. And for any tennis fans out there that are missing tennis, we have some great, the last couple of podcasts that I've done have been some really fascinating, getting in depth, talking about depression, talking about the difficulties of being a professional athlete, from like Chris Evert and, you know, great player called Mary Pierce and Andy Roddick. And we've had some really fun ones lately, and they've been really good. And so, yeah, it's just a 45 minute, like you guys do, 45 minutes to an hour of talking some really fun stuff. Mary told a story about taking me to the ER in New York when I was young with a little alcohol poisoning. So it all gets out there. It's a bit of fun.
We get to learn about Renee Stubbs' mistakes. I love it. I love it all. Thank you so much for coming on Scissoring. You are incredible, and you actually have a new crush. Someone has a crush on you, Liz Cully. She's married. I've always had a crush on you, but thank you so much for coming on and taking the time, Renee. You're great.
Thank you.
You guys are welcome. I'm always happy to have a threesome with you guys.
Yeah, I want that as my ringtone.
I have no words. I'm just going to hit stop record.
Thank you for listening to Scissoring Isn't a Thing. See you next Tuesday.